Morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on April 1st of 2021 under the headline, Johnny's Frankie Lived in Portland, Hiding from Her Song. It is part one of a two-part presentation of the Oregon story of Frankie Baker. The Frankie Baker of Frankie and Johnny fame. Here we go. Sometime in 1915, a 40-year-old black woman named Frankie Baker stepped off the train at Portland's Union Station. She had come to stay. Oregon would be her home for the rest of her life. At that time, Portland had a reputation as a good place to hide out when you were on the lam. It was far off the beaten path, but the town had all the cultural perquisites of civilization, most of them anyway. Plus, the people of Oregon had a reputation for minding their own business. So a lot of people who got into trouble back east came to Portland hoping for a fresh start. And yes, Frankie was one of them. But she wasn't running from the law. She wasn't running from an abusive spouse. No, she was running from a popular song. Because Frankie Baker was the Frankie of Frankie and Johnny fame. The story told in Frankie and Johnny is very well known. The song has been covered by at least 250 recording artists over the past 120 years. Mae West made it her theme song. Elvis Presley's recording earned him a gold record. Originally, it was a ragtime piece, but it's been adopted into jazz, Louis Armstrong, Count Basie, Dave Brubeck, country, Johnny Cash, Doc Watson, Jimmy Rogers, blues, Lead Belly, Mississippi John Hurt, Mississippi Joe Calicott, rock and roll, Jerry Lee Lewis, Van Morrison, Gene Vincent, basically every musical style that's come along since the end of the 19th century. Somewhere out there, there is probably even a dubstep version. I couldn't find one, but I did find Lena Horne's, and the list just goes on and on and on. By the way, if you'd like to tour that big giant list of covers of this song, you can find links to most of them on the Offbeat Oregon history page for this story. A Google search for Offbeat Oregon Frankie Baker will pull it right up. Of course, it should be no big surprise that the story the song tells is not strictly true. But what was the true story, you might ask? Well, we know the general outline, but the details have been lost in the mists of time. Despite the song's popularity throughout the 1900s, nobody seems to have really dug into its origins until 1975, when a St. Louis University graduate student named John R. David took it on for his PhD dissertation. By then, Mr. David found most of the people involved were long dead, and most of the survivors were so dang sick of the song, or so ashamed of their own youthful indiscretions, or those of their close relatives, that they didn't want to talk about it. Nevertheless, Mr. David was able to get a pretty good general picture. Frankie's story starts in her hometown, St. Louis, Missouri. The music scene in St. Louis in 1899 was hot, probably the hottest in the country. There and in New Orleans, down the river, a musical culture had developed that would foreshadow the Harlem Renaissance. It was fueled by a cadre of black piano players like Jelly Roll Morton playing a brand new style of jumpy syncopated music called ragtime. The scene was centered around bars, clubs, and sporting houses. More on sporting houses in a minute, in the rougher neighborhoods of the two river towns. It was a true musical golden age, but it was happening in an underworld, and a black community at that. Mainstream white historians openly sneered at it and certainly wouldn't condescend to help document it for posterity. Recording technology had not yet been invented, so all we have are a few legends and anecdotes along with some sheet music, usually written down years later. But Frankie Baker was right there, in the middle of it. She had been born in St. Louis in 1876, so in 1899 she was 23 years old. Photographs of her as a young woman show a strikingly pretty black girl with wavy hair, no-nonsense mouth, and confident eyes. She was tiny, under 5 feet 1 inch tall, about 100 pounds, and most accounts agree she had that X factor, a charisma that men found fascinating. She worked as a boarding house proprietress, although there is some reason to believe her boarding house was one of those sporting houses I mentioned. About those, the St. Louis sporting houses were effectively bordellos. but the full-service type. Basically, there were places where young bachelors paid to party. They were well-stocked with friendly ladies, there was a piano professor who would be hammering out a lively ragtime dance tune, liquor flowed freely and sometimes so did other drugs, and most customers ended up spending the night with one of the employees in one of several upstairs bedrooms. According to a writer calling himself Dudley McClure, who may actually have been Stuart Holbrook in real life, the writing style sounds a lot like his. Whoever he was, Mr. McClure interviewed Frankie in 1935, at which time Frankie told him she was considered the queen sport of St. Louis, flashing diamonds as big as hen's eggs, and pursued constantly by suitors wearing diamond suspender buttons who played high, wide, and handsome. McClure was writing for Daring Detective, a true crime pulp magazine, so his account can't be taken at face value, but nonetheless he paints quite a picture. Her jewels, plumes, and fine clothing were the toast of the gamblers, horse players, and sporting gentry who played in the gay nightlife of the Missouri City, he wrote. She was small-waisted, haughty, and desirable. Whether she was a pious, respectable young landlady or an underworld Venus, Frankie apparently made pretty good money doing whatever she did. So when she fell in love with a young piano professor, 17-year-old Alan Britt, she showered him with gifts, and soon the two of them were a certified item. But Al was young and frisky, and his eye soon wandered away from Frankie and caught that of a girl named Alice Pryor. Soon he and Alice were running around together, and he was making obvious attempts to break it off with Frankie. As part of those efforts, according to court records, he apparently started beating her. Things came to a head one day when Al stood Frankie up for a date. Frankie tracked him down. It wasn't at Alice's house. The two of them were at a party at another friend's place. At the subsequent inquest, Frankie testified that she went back to her house and went to bed in the front bedroom. It's hard to tell for sure from the testimony, but apparently this was Al's bed because when he got home at 3 a.m. and found Frankie in it, he got very angry. I jumped out of bed and says, "What's the matter with you, Al?" And he says, "What the hell are you doing in this bed?" Frankie testified. She said that Al then got out his knife and circled around the bed, slashing at Frankie with it. Frankie reached under the pillow and pulled out her .32 revolver. "Everyone carried a gun in those days," she later said, and shot him with it once, in the stomach. Al then walked 2 blocks to his parents' house for help. They put him to bed and called a doctor, but 2 days later he succumbed to his wound. Frankie was arrested, of course, but in court she was promptly acquitted of the murder charge on self-defense grounds. It surely helped that her eye was still swollen from a punch she'd taken from Al a night or two before the shooting. And that was the end of it, or so everyone thought. But Alan Britt was a piano professor, and it seems his fellow ticklers of the ivories didn't buy Frankie's story. At least one of them seems to have decided to avenge his fallen comrade with a song. You wouldn't think a song would be the ultimate revenge vehicle, but in this case at least, it sure turned out to be just that. We'll get into the details in part 2 of this 2-part presentation in tomorrow's episode. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Say, are you an audiobook listener? And do you enjoy old pre-war pulp stories like Tarzan of the Apes and Conan the Barbarian and The Call of Cthulhu and stuff like that? Or do you like early Victorian penny dreadful fiction like Sweeney Todd and Varney the Vampire and Highwayman Dick Turpin? If so, you might enjoy the audiobooks I have out there in the world. The easiest way to find them is for the search for my name on audible.com. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.